You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about perfectionism and procrastination with Denise Jacobs. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Visual Chefs, a versatile web development agency with expertise in content management system and custom web application development. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Visual Chefs propels the web forward.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor. So today, we're talking to creativity evangelist Denise Jacobs about the perfectionism procrastination loop that sometimes hinders productivity. Some of our listeners may know Denise for her front-end work in education, including her book, The CSS Detective Guide. But these days, Denise has turned her passion towards creativity and productivity. She consults with companies and individuals to make their creative processes more fluid, as well as give them methods for making work environments more conducive to creative productivity. Welcome to the show, Denise.
Hey, thank you guys. It's so great to be here.
Excellent. So Denise, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Yeah. So just like Emily said, I am a former front-end developer and designer, but over the last several years, I've shifted my focus pretty dramatically away from front-end development to more towards creativity and productivity and innovation. So now I really had been focused primarily on speaking and trying to get the word out about all of the things that I find wonderful about creativity. But I have also recently started my own creativity consulting firm, which is called The Creative Dose. And I've partnered up with a woman named Jessie Sternschuss of The Improv Effect. And we are now going around basically trying to achieve world domination through creativity and innovation. So it's been pretty amazing to see how, you know, and actually, Emily, we had a talk a few years back at South by Southwest. And Emily, Leah, I don't know if you know this, but Emily, we were talking and I was like, you know, I'm just really interested in doing something different than front-end development. And she was like, you know, you should be like a coach or like a motivational thing or something. Like, she was like, if you did that, I would totally listen to you because you're just so like inspiring most of the time. And I was like, huh. So that did not fall on deaf ears, Emily. That's what I'm doing now, but through creativity and through innovation.
Well, I'm so excited for you. I'm curious, you mentioned your partner's name is Jessie, is that right?
Jessie Sternschuss.
Sternschuss. She's a comedian? She does improv or is it something else?
She's not a comedian. What she does, it's really interesting. I met her at the Norwegian Developers Conference in Oslo back in June. And she had done a workshop the day before me, which was like kind of creativity and innovation skills for developers, but using improvisation techniques. Hmm. And so she does something that's called applied improvisation. So it's not like you're just getting up on a stage and like, let's just make up a sketch. It's more like using improvisation techniques to teach concepts. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. We're actually going to be going to attend. This is one of the first conferences I've actually gone to attend and not just speak at, and I can't remember how long. But there's a conference called the Applied Improvisation Network Conference, and that is in November, at the beginning of November in Austin, Texas. And I am thrilled about going to this conference and learning all kinds of new stuff to apply to what I'm doing.
I'm so excited for you. It just proves I knew this when I met you, that the first South by Southwest I went to, that's when I met you. But you set your mind to something and you go for it. I've always appreciated that about you because I remember when we were talking last year and you were talking about this is the direction you were going in. I was so excited for you. And here it is. You've made it come true.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I once dated a guy many years ago, kind of in my dark days of dating. And I was involved with this guy for a while. And he used to do this thing that I just really didn't understand, which was he would talk about stuff. And he would talk about plans and talk about things that he wanted to do, and then nothing would happen.
Mm, right.
And You're a doer.
I didn't understand. I was like, well, why would you even bother to use your breath to say something that you weren't actually going to act on? And it just made me very conscious of trying to make an effort to not do that myself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So usually when I say something, I mean business, and it doesn't mean that it's going to happen tomorrow. It may take years, but like, just know the fact that I mentioned it means that I'm working on it.
Mm-hmm. That kind of presents an interesting segue to the topic of procrastination. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is you did a great piece for Sherpa on the perfectionism procrastination loop. Yes. And I wanted to talk about that because I think it's something that when you and I were working on the piece together, I just related to it so much because I'm a perfectionist and I really have issues with procrastination. Mm-hmm. So let's start with some of the basics. How would you define perfectionism?
Well, perfectionism is basically when you're really focused on having this outcome be perfect, and you're not really focused so much on the process itself, but you have this kind of vision in your head, and you want to achieve that vision at all costs, no matter if that means you're not going to sleep or eat or anything. It's like you have this kind of almost skewed vision of what's achievable and what's acceptable. And there's really no kind of wiggle room. Like, it has to be this one thing and that's it. That's kind of one of the ways I think about it.
So how would you define procrastination?
Well, procrastination is when you put something off that you want to achieve. So you've got a list of things and you kind of put it off and put it off and never get around to doing it. Or it takes an inordinately long time for you to finally do it.
I mean, I feel like procrastination might be a learned behavior, but is perfectionism a learned behavior, or is it like a trait? Like, I feel like I've always been the way that I am.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. It's kind of hard to unpack. I mean, like, when did you first get the memo? You know, like, when did you first get the memo that if you made a mistake, it was going to be horrible
bad
for you? Yeah, like it was going to be like the consequences were just going to be unbearable, you know, because I remember growing up, the irony of it is really funny. I remember there was this point in time when I was responsible from the age of 7, actually, I was responsible for washing the dishes after school. So whatever dishes were in the sink, I would come home and wash the dishes. And I was actually excited about it. When I would, like, on my 7th birthday, I was like, oh my God, I get to, like, contribute to the household. My parents were so good at tricking me. They were really their masters at their craft. But, you know, after a certain period of time, like, it wore off after about 3 days. I was like, wait a minute, what? But so I remember this one time when I was a teenager that I wanted to go out and hang out with a friend across the street. And my mother was like, no, you have to finish washing the dishes and you have to do a thorough job and you're not leaving the kitchen until the dishes are done right. That's like, whoa, like that's kind of heavy duty, you know, like you have to do a thorough job. Now, the irony, like I said, is I roll up to my mom's house. I'll like look through, you know, I'll be like putting the dishes away and I'll be like, really? Really? Is there really food still on this dish? She goes like, oh, I guess I missed that. I'm like, yeah. So when I was 14, it was all about doing a thorough job and now you don't care. So I think things like that, they happen, and there's no way that we can pinpoint like that time when you were 4 or that time that you were 2. And, you know, you see people with kids all the time and it's no, put that down. No, don't touch that. Dude, you got to why are your shoes untied? Duh, you've got dirt on your face. La, 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 la. This is very easy to see how something like that could become instilled so early that you can't figure out where it came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, for me, you know, just observing, I also like really relate to this, like growing up, you know, stereotyping myself, I'm from an Asian family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coming from that, you must get all A's, 90%, why not 100 kind of type of discussion. So I definitely get that. What I'm curious about in terms of like having things learned because of how you were brought up or is part of it is innate, I feel like there's a lot of individuals in our tech industry that exhibit these types of perfectionist traits. I'm curious if you believe that, just based on your observation, that that's more prevalent in this industry than other industries.
Well, you know, I've been in this industry since 1997. So I don't know if I have a whole lot of other industries to compare it with, but I would have to say that this is what I'll say. I know that this content seems to resonate a lot with people in this industry, not just from this article, but from this article and some other work that I've done. I have a talk that's called Banish Your Inner Critic. A big part of it is this perfectionism and procrastination and how they work together. And afterwards, I've had a lot of people come up and say, oh my God, you were talking to me. Right. Like, that was so, like, I have all that, like, check, yep, check, 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 like, just going down the list, and people have said that it really resonates with them. So I think that it is particularly in this industry, I think the tendency is to get into that because there's so much to learn, and because if you do make mistakes, sometimes the mistakes are a big deal. You mm-hmm. know, if you don't code something right, it could break stuff.
Right.
It could mess up the server. It could kill the website. It could, there's a lot of reasons why being careful and being thorough, for a lack of a better word, and precise is necessary in our industry. But sometimes then that tendency, it's like you don't know when to turn it off.
You know, as you were describing that, something kind of came up in my mind. When I was really getting into standards-based development, one of the things I liked about it is that the rules seemed very hard and fast at the time. This is how you do it, and if you're not doing it this way, you're not supporting standards. That's how I mm-hmm. perceived it and received it and processed it. And I carried that through as I was learning it and became proficient in that approach, that workflow, that mindset, and, you know, keeping up with the techniques that support that. It kind of fed that perfectionistic tendencies in myself, because there was a right way and there was a wrong way, and it was black and white. But then as I got into more education and public speaking and really sharing, and then also as my work evolved, that sort of hard and fast thinking, it's just, you know, it's more nuanced than that. Mm-hmm. But if you learn it like I did, and coming at it from a right or wrong perspective, I think it can be really attractive to someone who's perfectionistic. But then mm-hmm. you get caught in a box like that, and you have to say, these are the best practices. There's no right. rules. Right. There's no, this is what you have to do, but this is what right. we've found right. works best. It's just more nuanced.
It is more nuanced. And then there, you know, and that could be true of everything, right? Here's a best practice. But then there's also get her done, you know, like there's like, we need to get this out the door. And then there's also like, is it worth, like one of the things that I liked seeing, there's something called Pareto's principle, which was the 80% versus the 20%. And I like the idea of using that and applying it to perfectionism and saying, okay, instead of saying this whole thing of you get 80% of your work from 20% of your clients, for example, would be an application of that. But I like taking that 80-20% and saying, okay, if you do 80% of awesome, like you're still closer to awesome than not awesome, right?
Right. Right.
You know, if you do 80% of what you would consider amazing, perfect, flawless, then you are still ahead of the game. And that 20% that you would spend trying to make it absolutely with no chinks or flaws or anything is not going to be worth it. Most of the time, it really isn't. And mm-hmm. for example, I was saying that I'm working with Jesse, and now we've been putting out all kinds of proposals for work. And I'll send something to her, and she'll be like, oh my God, this proposal is gorgeous. And I'm just like, oh, will you look and see if there's anything wrong with it? And she was like, are you kidding? She was like, I have sent way uglier proposals than this and way less put together than this, and I still got the work. She was like, this is great. Let's just send it. There may be typos and stuff in it. But you know what? That never stopped me before. It's not mm-hmm. going to stop us. It's not going to, you know, if the overall thing is good. And so it's really nice, too, because I'm still personally battling perfectionism. It's in there. It's deeply ingrained. I did this article because I needed the article.
Right.
I talk about this stuff because I need it, too. And I did this article, and because I'm working on it, and having somebody who doesn't have the problem, who's not afflicted with perfectionism, is really helpful for me because it helps me put things in perspective. Like, she's like, this is gorgeous. Let's just send it. Let's go and let's do the next one.
Well, I feel like that phrase, just send it, is so much harder to actually do. And I feel like that's what, you know, that pressure of perfectionism is what, at least for me, leads to procrastination, where it's like, okay, I really want it to be perfect. And perhaps maybe it's my idea of perception that it's perfect. I want the other person to believe it's perfect beyond just myself. So it's like, I put it off. I keep reading it. Even if I don't make a change, sometimes I have a design or something. I just stare at it for hours. No change before I'm like, okay, maybe I should send it. Fiddle my thumbs. How do you feel perfectionism leads to procrastination? How does it develop?
The thing is that when you've got this kind of sense, heightened sense of it needs to be right and it needs to be perfect and all of this stuff, you feel like if you don't actually achieve that, then it means that there's something bad about you or there's something wrong or you're like unworthy or whatever. And so it's like you're trying to kind of forestall that inevitable, what you feel like that other shoe dropping or that kind of mallet coming down, like, I think what happens is we're not just putting things off because, you know, like a lot of times with procrastination, it's like this kind of misguided sense of what is necessary or how long it's going to take or what the actual tasks are or whatever. Like, how many times have you put off something because you said, oh my God, it's going to take me so long. And then when you finally do it, you're like, that took me like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That didn't take any time at all. But you spent more time thinking about how long it was going to take you to do it than it actually took to do it. So it's this kind of misguided sense of what is necessary. I think, you know, perfectionists put things off because they kind of fear that criticism or the ridicule or whatever. And fear the sense of failure, like fear somebody. Sometimes it's like I put all this time into a proposal or put so much time into preparing stuff. I used to do this when I did presentations because I didn't want anybody to ever come back and say, you're wrong.
Right.
That wasn't correct. You didn't do your research, blah, blah, blah. And especially, and you two know about this, especially being female in our industry, in a technical industry, then it's like we're up for that much more scrutiny and everything. And then for me, being African-American and female, then I'm up for that much, even that much more scrutiny. So I never, ever wanted anybody to come up and just be like, you know what? You don't know what you're talking about. And then see, this is why we don't have folks like you speaking at these conferences, because y'all don't know anything.
Do you feel like, sorry to interrupt. No, it sounds very similar to imposter syndrome.
Super duper. And I feel like they're all related, right?
Right.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, this is why I kind of focus on this, that these are kind of the key blocks to people actually expressing themselves creatively. So imposter syndrome, perfectionism, procrastination, comparisons, that sort of thing. All of those like get us all kind of lost in the sauce, as it were, and get it to the point where that all those great ideas and like all of our genius and brilliance is trapped and blocked and kind of going in circles because we're not actually, you know, those ideas aren't able to flow because these things block them. And so that's one of the reasons why I focus on this so much, because it's real, because a lot of people say, yep, I struggle with this all the time. And brilliant people say that they struggle with this all the time. Brilliant people struggle with imposter syndrome and perfectionism and procrastination. So it's like, I don't think anybody's immune to it. So if we can kind of drill down and get to the bottom of, you know, figure out ways to kind of bust through the blocks, then we can get it so that creativity and innovation really flow.
You know, I think when finding what those blocks are, it kind of starts with even recognizing that there's a problem. And so I was hoping that maybe you could give our listeners an example of what this perfectionist loop to procrastination how it might translate in like a web project.
You guys have experienced this before, I'm sure yourselves many times, and I'm sure a lot of people have. So like I've had situations, you know, personally when I was doing web projects and stuff where I talk to the client, I'm like super excited. We have a great conversation. You know, it's so clear about everything that needs to be done. And I'm like totally jazzed about it and stuff. And then, you know, invariably something pops up. Usually that would be in the form of a speaking engagement. And then, you know, like when I finally get back to the project, it's just like, okay, wait a minute. But, you know, we talked about this and I really want them to be happy with the project. And so I probably need to do some more research before I can really get started on this. And so then I dive into research because research is like my comfort zone. And then you find all this crazy stuff during your research that affects what you're doing. And then you're like, okay, well then maybe I should change the process because right. of these new things that I found with the research. And then you start changing the process. And then you're just like, oh my God, this is going to take so much longer than I thought. And I only said that it was going to take this many hours. And so then you're like trying to figure out how you can do the work without it taking too many hours. And then you got to talk to the client about the extra hours and you don't want to do that. And you're like, well, maybe I can just do that. And it just keeps spiraling out of control, I think, until you're like, I don't even want to look at this. Like, it's just going to be too much to try to unravel everything. And I have to add the this, and I have to do that. And then I have to talk to the client, and I'm already behind because it took me too long. And then you're lost. You're lost, and nobody ends up happy. The client's like, hey, so where are we at with stuff? Mm-hmm. And you're like, right. Just a moment. It's coming. And we've all had this. And then mm-hmm. you finally, when you get it out the door, this has been my problem. I did way too much work. way too much work. Like 10 times more work than I needed to. Yeah, trying to make this stupid thing perfect. I was late. I was over budget. And I did too much. And like if I had given them a fraction what I had on time, they would have been happier.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I would have been less stressed. Too.
Mm-hmm. Less stress. I would have slept. I would have eaten. And so I can't imagine that this is my experience is singular and unique.
Not at all.
Okay, good. And I think that's what ends up happening. And we've all experienced that. There's been some projects that are better than others, right? Some projects that actually went smoothly. But then there are those however many that just went completely off track. Mm-hmm. And we struggled. Like I have struggled to try to get them back on track. And I just couldn't because mm-hmm. of this stuff. Because
I think especially because we're in our technological industry, there's always something new,
right?
Mm-hmm. When you were talking and explaining this exact scenario, I thought of Emily, when you started implementing our SAS and starter files. Mm-hmm. And how many times you were like, okay, I'm going to change this. Okay, just wait until I see, like, you know, this is fixed, then you can take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually had to force myself to adopt the mentality that our base files that we use to kick off all projects, that they themselves are in a constant state of evolution. They will never be perfect.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. wherever they stand when we start a new project is the base of that project. I can't spend all my time. And mm-mm. when I'm in the middle of a project, I am not implementing anything new. I might mm-hmm. find things new and they go on a list for later.
Nice.
There's no other way to manage it other than just being really strict with yourself.
Because you drive yourself crazy otherwise.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and another thing that occurred to me when you were describing that scenario is something that I try to remind myself of regularly. And it's from Anna Brown. We had her on the show sometime last year. Mm-hmm. And she basically said, we're just making websites.
Yep.
You know, life is in danger. This isn't going to change the world. It's just a website. And so whenever I start getting really caught up in the, you know, needing to be on time and needing it to be perfect and blah, 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 I just remember that this, it is just a website and that, you know, nothing has to be perfect at any given point in time. It can always be improved and that's always okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that this is kind of sacrilege in our industry and all that stuff, but if it's not the most beautifully crafted code or the most perfectly put together based on all of the latest best practices, which change on like a monthly basis.
Right.
Like the standards, you know, I remember when I was a few years back when I was teaching CSS 3 and like I had kind of started really doing more of the creativity, speaking on creativity and stuff. So I had one workshop that happened in like February or April, and then I didn't do another one until October. Between and within like that 6 month period of time, as a matter of fact, I think it was like between April and September even. In that period of time, the specification for gradients had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrome and those guys were doing the same thing that Mozilla was. So WebKit was the same as Mozilla, the syntax, whereas the syntax had been like really different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, really? I cannot. Like, I have to do something else because I can't. This is going to drive me crazy because I know that I'm a perfectionist and because mm-hmm. I want this stuff to be right and all the other things that I listed earlier. Like, I was like, I can't. Can it give me something that doesn't change every other day?
Well, and it's not just the change. I mean, there's parts of that change that I love because I love learning, and being in a constant state of learning appeals to me. But mm-hmm. there are people, and I can admit that once upon a time I was one of these people,
right,
where I would look at people's source code and judge them on it.
Yeah.
Like,
okay,
you know,
right.
And like people,
and life
like,
is too short for that. Like,
it is.
There are like flowers to be smelled and like
exactly.
delicious fruit to be eaten and sun to be soaked up. Like, what do we gain from doing something like that? That kind of craziness. But it's true. And I think in certain circles, that was expected. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
this is what it means to be a standardista.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this is what it means to be really into the craft of making the code. And I think there's a certain point where you get to a point where you're just like, but the site needs to be built. And I always feel like if anybody's going to be looking at my code and judging it, then they can come in and fix it.
Right.
I feel like right now we're talking about our individual ideas and our own experiences. But I feel like the procrastination perfectionism loop affects teams. And I feel like that might be where a lot of tension can occur.
Yes.
You know, it's just Emily and I and our team, so it's easier to communicate. But once you've got a larger team, and some of these larger teams can be siloed in their specific individual tasks and particular things, usually it's like a design team wants this particular look and feel, and then the development team's like, well, we need to have it launched tomorrow, so we're not going to put everything on there. And then there's that tension over there because of that. They feel like they're not being heard. And then there's that perfectionism in both teams trying to like just do the best that they can.
Kind of duking it out.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to figure out, well, how do we alleviate that? How is there a way for people to... Well, I know people will always judge whatever others work. That's just life. But I'm just trying to figure out, well, how do we break that down?
Well, it's actually really interesting because I had a couple of thoughts on that. The first one is that part of that is culture, right? Some part of that is company culture. Part of that is team culture, that sort of thing. And culture can be changed, right? Culture can be shifted. And I think when individuals within teams are given the proper tools to really work within the team differently and kind of up-level how they work together and how they communicate, then it can really change the dynamic of the team and change actually the way the team produces. So, and how people produce individually and also how they produce collectively. And that's actually some of the work that Jesse and I do with the Creative Dose, is we actually focus a lot on team communication and collaboration and working first with people, kind of helping them with their individual, working on like identifying, oh, I do this perfectionism mm-hmm. thing, or I do this procrastination thing, like you were saying earlier about just the awareness of it. So kind of increasing the awareness and then saying, okay, now that you know that you do this, here are some ways that you can work together better, and here are some things that you can use to put into the culture of the team that will start to shift that dynamic. So that's one of the reasons why improv is, you know, using improv techniques is so powerful, because with improv, it's like there aren't mistakes. They're just like gifts, like whatever somebody gives you, you go with it. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you get into a mind frame where the stakes aren't so high for making mistakes, then I think it's easier to start getting away from, oh, OK, like this has to be perfect. Just like you were saying, I'm not going to touch the files when we start a project. We're not allowed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing. The other thing that I was thinking that's really helpful, and then you guys, I think, are a really good example of this. And, you know, anybody who works with other people is a good example of this. When you work with other people and you realize that this is something that's an issue, if you find people that you work with who you are kind of, that you synergize well with, then you can have them offset your tendencies. Mm. Right. So, Leah, I'm sure that you probably see Emily like starting to go down the rabbit hole, and you're like, Emily, come away from the light. Come away from the light. And you're just like, don't go there. Like, look, it's fine. We'll send it. It's cool. We're done. We're just, you have to go to bed now, you know, like that sort of thing. Yeah. And when you have people who kind of have your back that way, then it starts to help you see that you don't have to do that. Because part of it is kind of a coping mechanism or like a survival mechanism. Right. You're doing this because you think that it's going to help you avoid some kind of pain or something in the future. But when somebody else is like, you know what, you're fine. There's nothing bad is going to happen. It's going to be okay. Right. Then it's like it helps you relax on it. So having people around you kind of help you kind of call you on your stuff and pull you away from the edge of the precipice, you know, from the abyss, that really helps. And then, like I said, also having some different techniques for communication and things like that also help change the team dynamic so that people aren't as wrapped up with it's got to be perfect. They're more wrapped up with like, let's see how we can make this work together.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. I just keep thinking about the branding exercise Emily and I went through. And
how was that anyway?
Wonderful and painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
like anything good.
Yeah. And I think part of the thing, because Emily and I, we do both have these perfectionist tendencies. And I think what helped is that we both agreed ahead of time to give ourselves deadlines. Because if we gave ourselves these deadlines that were immutable, then it forced us to like say, well, the decision needs to be made now.
Right.
And then we made peace with those decisions, you know. It wasn't like we made arbitrary dates and that's the date and, you know, it's totally immovable. But it's one of those things where if we had a date and we wanted to make sure that we can move forward, you know, in our decision-making process, especially when we were trying to figure out our name and, you know, our logo and all those kind of things, at some point we had the discussion as in like, not moving forward is going to harm us, actually. You know, so it was better to actually move beyond, like, it has to be the most perfect name and the most perfect logo forever and ever. Amen. You know? And then once we had that in place, it was just, okay, here's the decision. Can we work with this?
Right.
And most times we can.
Yeah. And I think the time factor too, kind of being more realistic about time really helps. Like I really like being aware of this is what's happening right now. It doesn't mean that it's happening forever.
Yes.
It just means that it's happening right now. Mm-hmm. Several years back, before I really, well, actually kind of in the middle of, you know, when I started working in the web industry, but then I was getting frustrated and I decided to start learning how to make herbal soaps.
Oh, and so, what a shift. Yeah.
Yes. So I actually started making soap and then I started teaching people how to make soap and I started this soap making business. This was back in like 1998 or 97. And I remember a friend of mine said to me at one point, I was like, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to start this soap making thing. And she was like, you know, really, Denise, I mean, do you want to be a soap maker for the rest of your life? And I was just like, well, I wasn't actually talking about the rest of my life. I was talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, I want to be a soap maker right now. Mm-hmm. And we'll see where it leads me. And if it doesn't work, then I'll do something else, you know, or when I'm tired and I want to do something else, I'll do something else. But right now, this is what I want to do. And it was really interesting because it also made me see her perceptions of the, see how she perceived the world in a different way. Like, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that she had this thing mm-hmm. where it's like, once you make a decision, like you, that's it. That's your decision. It's like, nope, that's really, this is just what's happening right now. And I think that's the same thing. You know, if you guys decide that you want to rebrand at some point, you will do that. And no puppies will die. The world is not going to turn off of its axis or anything like that. Everything's going to be fine. And so that's the other thing that helps me a lot of times with the perfectionism stuff is where I just say, you know what, for now, this is fine. And I used to say this when I was in college, when people would say, you know, we'd hand in our papers and they'd be like, well, you know, so was your paper, I mean, do you feel like it was good? And I was like, you know what, at this point, it's done and done is good. So just by the right that it's fact that it's done means that it's a good paper. Whatever grade I get, I get. But it's done, and that's great.
So, Denise, one thing that I often tell myself when I'm in the midst of this perfectionist procrastination loop is that sometimes when I'm procrastinating, I actually, and maybe I'm lying to myself, but I actually feel like it helps me get past the procrastination. It helps me finally reach productivity. Like sometimes getting all the laundry done and making sure that the house is clean is really helpful for me to put my mind at ease, even if I'm on a super tight deadline and I'm already pushing the limit of what I can get done. So is there such a thing as procrastination that actually is productive, that helps you?
Well, there is actually something called productive procrastination. And then there's actually something else, which I'll talk to you in a moment. But the productive, say that five times fast. Right? productive procrastination. If you say it slow, it helps. The thing that's interesting about that, and it's actually a thing, is that, you know, the way you do it is you take, like, say you have three tasks that are all fairly high priority. If you take, instead of the one that's the highest priority, let's say, and you work, start working on this one that's kind of the second priority, but you start, you make headway on that, that's basically known as productive procrastination. Mm. So you're not working on the thing that you kind of determined to be the top priority, but you are working on something that is high priority. And so a lot of times too, like, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I'm working on something, after a while, I just need a break from it. So then I'll kind of switch myself to something else that needs to get done, and I'll work on that, and then I'll switch back, you know, once I've kind of had a sufficient amount of time as a break from the first thing, then I'll go back to it. So productive procrastination actually does exist, and it can be an effective tactic. The other thing that I wanted to mention, though, is not necessarily about productive procrastination per se, but has to do with how our brains work to be creative and how our brains work to kind of process stuff. Mm-hmm. I have a talk called White Space Creativity, which talks about how you kind of leverage in between spaces to help spur your creativity. In that case, I talk about things like daydreaming and spacing out and laying down, you know, to kind of just close your eyes for a few minutes, or doing things like repetitive tasks like laundry or dishes or, you know, sweeping and stuff like that. Actually, all of those activities actually help your brain go into alpha brainwave mode, which is one of the places where you are most creative when you're kind of conscious. You're still awake and aware, but you're kind of zoning out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Actually, going into alpha brainwave mode really does help stimulate your creativity and does help your brain put together ideas in ways that you may not have done before. So I can actually see taking a break and like going and washing the dishes, even though you, it seems like you're procrastinating, it could be just something that you need for your brain to actually work through the problem. Because basically you're procrastinating, like I was saying, because you don't really have a clear sense of how this thing is supposed to work. Like, you have this kind of concrete task that needs to happen, but your brain's kind of thinking about it in very abstract, in a very abstract way. And so you don't really know what the next thing it is that you need to do is, right? Like, you don't have it broken down into, okay, that means I need to take this step and this step and this step. And that's one of the reasons why you're kind of putting it off, because it doesn't have a form in your mm-hmm. head. Sometimes when you take time to do something like wash the dishes or walk the dog or something like that, your brain can actually think through the process and come up with ideas on how to take those next steps. Mm-hmm. And that actually can be valuable as well. I'm not telling people to not do their work.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But I am saying that there is something to those kind of, quote, down times or those down moments.
So if there's something as productive procrastination, how can folks with perfectionist tendencies make the most out of them without being crippled by them?
I actually think structured procrastination is great for people who are perfectionists.
Structured.
Yeah, like productive procrastination, structured productive procrastination. I think that is actually really good for people who are perfectionists because, you know, when you're a perfectionist, you do want to get things done and you want things to be done well. And like, I've found that when I personally do productive procrastination or structured productive procrastination, when I engage in stuff like that, I end up getting momentum, like having a sense of, you know, starting to have more of a sense of a win, and that kind of sense of like actually that I'm actually moving forward on something. Then I take that momentum and I can transfer it to something else. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, right.
So it's kind of like the excitement or, you know, like, oh, okay, this is actually finally coming together and blah, 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 blah. Then that sometimes helps me see how this other thing that wasn't entirely clear, which is why I was putting it off, how that can come together as well. And so then that gives me kind of fuel to go back to that other task or back to that other kind of series of tasks and start to attack it and start to really make headway on it because of the progress that I made on the other one.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, especially if I've been coding for a long time mm-hmm. and maybe I've hit a snag and, you know, I've tried a couple things and it hasn't really worked out. And then, oh, it's dinner time. I've just got to go focus on that right now. Mm-hmm. And then as I'm making dinner, all of a sudden I'm like, I haven't tried it. That's, and then after dinner, I'm ready to get back to work and I'm kind of excited because I'm like, I totally know what I need to do now. But staring and physically trying things 10 different ways wasn't getting it done. It was taking a step back and doing something kind of mindless.
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes for me, like the difference between coding and designing something
right.
or like just doing something where I stimulated actually a different part of my brain, mm-hmm. you know, the visual part of your brain is different than the kind of analytical part of your brain. And just making that another part of your brain fire gave that the first part of your brain a break and then allowed it to kind of relax and then allowed the ideas to happen. So I definitely think that there is something about switching gears, you know, switching tracks, doing different things and exercising different parts of your brain, because our brains are actually not designed to focus and to work as much as we make them to. You know, if they've done studies and they showed prehistoric humans and how they spent their time, and they did not spend all their time on a computer thinking for 10 or 12 hours a day. Like they just didn't. They spent a little bit of focus time, you know, hunting and gathering and things like that. And then they spent a lot of time like socializing and hanging out. And I would have to say that our brains are probably still wired that way. And we're trying to make them do stuff that it just doesn't do very well. Which is why I think those down times, those down moments are actually really important for us, because they actually enable us to function better cognitively.
That actually reminds me something that happened yesterday. I was trying to troubleshoot something. Then I had a meeting with Emily right afterwards that was completely unrelated. And we were mm-hmm. just, you know, chatting randomly at the beginning of that. And then while we were chatting, I'm like, let me try this one thing. that I was working on just before we got on the call. Like, it just came to me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, this works. And like, and previously before the call, I was like spending 20 minutes like, okay, is this going to work? Is this other? And then I'm like, I don't know what the next thing to do, whatever. I have a meeting. I need to stop thinking about it because I have a meeting. And then during that chat, the other idea came to me.
Right. And see, that's the thing. I mean, one thing that I think I find interesting, and there's a neurologist whose name is Marcus Rackley. I have a quote from him in the White Space Creativity presentation, which is, when our brains are supposedly doing nothing, they're really doing a tremendous amount. So to actually fit that into your schedule, like, okay, I'm going to have some time where I'm actually on purpose doing something mindless just to give my brain the space to kind of breathe, just for it to kind of respire a little bit and for the to get some space between the ideas so that they can connect in different ways. And a lot of times you, I know you both have experienced it, when you're working on something and you're too close to it, you can't see the solution. But I feel like that's totally different from procrastination, right? Like that is a different thing when you are deliberately saying, I'm taking time away from this so that I can come up with a solution. That's different than procrastination. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to know that there is a difference between the two.
So that taking more mind space is one recommendation. Do you have any other exercises or tools or even apps that you could recommend that might help people be more productive, be more creative without feeding into perfectionist tendencies?
Oh, God, an app. Now, an app, I actually don't have any apps because I'm kind of, I'm a little app-averse at this point because there's just, there's so much and it's another one of those, like, is that going to muddy the waters or is that going to clear the waters?
Right.
But in terms of practices, I mean, there's some really good stuff about making sure that the task is really meaningful. So making sure you put a task, like, so if you're procrastinating on something, if you put the task into a context where you actually understand why you're doing it and what the real meaning and value of it is, then you're probably more inclined to want to deal with it and to address it than if it's kind of, you know, like I said, when it's unclear and kind of nebulous in your head. So that's really important. And then another thing for perfectionists, you perfectionists out there, is to realize that there is a difference between perfectionism and excellence. And so, right, amen. You're like, oh, shoot, rewind. So yes, I'll say it again. There is a difference between excellence and perfection. Excellence comes from when you're really enjoying and learning from an experience, developing confidence and mastery in it, right? Perfection usually does not come with this enjoyment principle, but usually you have negative feelings about any mistakes that you made, and no matter how good your performance or how good you or how well you did something, you still will sit there and kind of analyze and criticize anything that you think is a misstep or a mishap. So if you focus more on this learning and achieving mastery and just doing it well to the extent that you're just like, oh, and especially I think it happens when you learn something new, when you allow yourself to just really surrender to the process of learning something new and like, I didn't know about this before and now I can do this thing. Isn't that great that I can do this thing that I couldn't do before? Then you can kind of get away from, did I do it perfectly kind of
place. Right. I like that.
Yeah. And then there is a practice called satisficing, and that is kind of that 80% when you really just go for something being sufficient and satisfactory. Like just having it be sufficient results. Is the proposal done? Great. You know, do we have all the information that it needs to have in there? Fantastic. Does it look perfect and amazing? No, but it's a proposal and they're going to read it like 10 minutes and then they're not going to look at it anymore. So don't kill yourself over it. And there's a lot of stuff too, where you can kind of realize like, look, the thing that I'm doing, if I just get it started, then I can iterate on it. And that's really important. Like it doesn't have to be the most amazing, perfect thing at the beginning.
Like, get something there in place and then build upon it. Mm-hmm. You know, make it a decent foundation and then build upon the foundation. And then in terms of the procrastination part of it, one of my favorite recommendations is to get ready to do something. So instead of saying, okay, I'm going to do this thing, then just get everything ready to do it. You know, get yourself, you know, I've got all of the assets here and I got the document open to start doing the coding and I got this and I got that. And then you're like, well, you know what? Well, I think I'll just put like the beginning part of the document in there and then I'll get to it later. And what ends up happening is when you start putting everything into place to prepare for it, then you end up just sliding into actually doing it. And so it's a great way to trick yourself.
I actually, when you were describing that, that's kind of how I start every day because I don't like to, I think I would love to never work ever again in my life. So I'm never, oh, yay, I get to work for 10 hours today. But I have a ritual where I start all my apps. I get the documents up for what I'm going to be doing. I get my playlist ready. Get my cup of coffee, like, and that process just sort of leads me into it, getting my environment right.
Yeah, so getting the environment right works really well. And then another thing that you can do is if you're kind of, this task is going to take so long, you know, if you're putting it off because you're like, it's going to take so long, then just say, okay, I'm going to do something for 10 minutes. Like, I think this is going to take me an hour, but I'm just going to work on it for 5 or 10 minutes and set a timer and then make it happen. And then when the timer goes off, stop. But what ends up happening a lot of times is once you get started, you know, there's a song by Rufus and Chaka Khan back from the 70s where she's like, once you get started, oh, it's hard to stop. So it's one of those things. Like once you get started, it's hard to stop. So you set the 5 minutes and then you're like, oh, and the timer goes off and you're like, oh, I'm already doing it. I'll just finish it. Or I'll do it for another 10 minutes or whatever it is. And so a lot of times things that I envision taking like hours take 20 minutes, half an hour. And then I'm like, oh, right. So just that getting started, you know, getting everything in place, setting the timer for 5 minutes, that sort of thing, it usually will get you over the hump.
Those are great.
Thanks, Denise. I mean, this has been an excellent conversation. I think will resonate with a lot of our viewers. And I know it resonated with me.
I'm actually so glad we are doing this right before I'm getting ready to go speak at a conference. And I've been telling Leia how nervous I am about performing. And it's because of that perfectionism in me, wanting to be perfect, wanting to not have anyone come up to me and be like, well, that's wrong. So this was exactly what I needed.
Yay. Good. Yay. And the other thing too, is that I think when, especially when you're talking at conferences, just as a little talking at conferences thing, one thing that I like to think is everybody in the audience actually wants you to succeed, right? Nobody there is really, you know, if there's the Grinch that stole Christmas in the audience, like they're usually just one. But usually everybody is really looking forward to what you have to say. They're excited about it. And just about anything that you say is going to be awesome for them. Like, oh, I never thought of that. Oh, I didn't know this. Or because that's the other thing, too. Like being thought leaders and considered experts and stuff like that, we have no perspective on what it is that we know. Because all of our friends are experts and stuff. So we're comparing ourselves, which is a no-no. Right? A boo-boo. We're comparing ourselves to all these other rock star, awesome people, you know, like when you're friends with Ethan Marcotte, it's hard not to be like, well, I didn't come up with responsive design, if that's what you mean. But the thing is that, you know, we're still so far ahead of the game compared to so many other people in the industry. I mean, there's still people who are probably trying to like design with tables. So I think anything you have to say is going to be pretty awesome sauce for people. And just remember that. And if somebody wants to be all grinchy and crazy and try to get all up in your business, then that's their thing. And then they can go and they can take it someplace else.
Agreed. Agreed. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Denise?
Bring it on, girl.
All right. So question one, Mac OS or Windows?
Mac.
What is your favorite mobile app?
Ooh, dictionary.com.
Interesting. What is your least favorite thing about social media?
Oh my God, like the drama. All of the drama.
What profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Actress.
What profession would you not like to do?
Project management.
Mm. Who is the web professional you admire the most?
God, I have to choose one? That's not fair. Like all of them?
The right answer is Leia and Emily.
Oh, right. Leia and Emily of Bright Umbrella are my favorite web professionals, if I had to choose.
Well, I'm not sure if you code anymore, but what music do you like to work to?
Preferably jazz, but I can actually only listen to music if I'm doing design work.
Ah.
And if I'm doing design work, if I'm listening to music when I'm working, it can only be instrumental. I can't listen to music with lyrics.
What is your secret talent?
Ooh. Well, if I have had enough sleep, then I can adjust to a new time zone almost immediately.
Wow. That is a talent.
It is my special, is my superpower.
So what's the most recent book you've read?
Oh, I just got done reading A Trashy Romance.
Nice.
Nice.
That has been turned into a TV show on the Starz Network, which I didn't even know. I was reading the book and I was in New York and I saw a thing on the side of a bus and it said, Outlander. And I was like, really?
Oh, I've seen the previews for that. It's like a period piece in like Scotland or something, right?
Yeah, except for it involves time travel.
Oh my gosh.
The woman is like, she's originally from like the 1940s. And she goes back in time like 200 years.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so I read that book and now I'm on the second one in the series.
All right. Last question. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Ooh. Star Wars.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, you guys. This was really a lot of fun. Wait a minute. Can I take back that and say Star Trek?
Oh, backtracking.
Yeah. You know what? Or yes. The answer is yes.
Fair enough. In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Okay, so my personal website is denisejacobs.com. My company website, my Creativity and Innovation Collective, is called The Creative Dose, and that's at thecreativedose.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Denise Jacobs on Twitter, and The Creative Dose is The Creative Dose on Twitter. And please come and check it out, because I have some extra cool projects that on the side that you should find out about, which you can find out if you follow me and come to my website.
It was so great to talk to you, Denise. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. It was awesome.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Visual Chefs, and Pixel and Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast, or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we're talking to Sean Maida of Visual Chefs. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.